Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and a very warm welcome back to the Red and Blue Review. Where have you all been? It's been weeks. It feels like, talk about a mid-season break. It feels like, I know it's been 3 weeks since we last did the show, but it absolutely seems to have dragged its heels out. International break. What a load of old crap that is. Anyway, joining me shortly will be Jim, Jill and Paul. We're going to be talking this evening. We're going to be leading, if you don't mind, on the ladies game. Obviously, Paul's going to be talking about yesterday's game up at the City Ground. But first of all, let's introduce the boys. Mr. Cannon, good evening, mate. How you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Good evening, all.
Jill? People have been asking about your health. How's your health?
Yeah, well, I've got a little thing going on the 30th of April. So if I'm here after that, you know it's all gone well.
So you won't be going to the ladies' game at Sellers on the
30th? Evening, everyone, on a lighter note.
So you won't be going to the ladies' game at Sellers on the 30th, and that's when it is, I think, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I'll be in hospital. So
you'll be out in a bloody, you'll be out in 2 hours, you will, bloody drama queen. And Paul, welcome back, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all good, thank you, Nick. Yeah, recovering. I had a little international break myself to New York while the game players weren't playing, so a little bit jet lagged. Other than that, I'm all good.
New York, yeah.
New York, yeah.
It's cold out there, though, isn't it?
It was cold, but the sky was blue, so it was all good.
I'm looking at all the people in the chat. I can see you, Richard. I can see you, Monty. Monty, I can see you out there. Ian Appley, good evening, mate. Thank you for joining us on the show. I hope you're all very welcome. So, as I said, we're going to be talking about the other teams and the ladies' team and all that sort of stuff, fixtures. But we are going to kick off this evening because I'm actually hoping there's a couple of them watching this evening, boys, if you don't mind. And I want to talk about the ladies' team. Now, Nigel's going to join us very quickly because for those of you who don't know, Nigel lives up in the northeast. And today he was at the Durham Palace Ladies versus Durham game, which was a bit of an interesting thing. If those of you watching, if you're not familiar with the league and how close it is, there is only one team that goes up from the Women's Championship to the Premier League. And Crystal Palace, although we're sitting in second place, are actually in pole position. And Nigel will show you that. So, yeah, there you go. So if you look at that, we've got three games left. So it's 22 game league. The Sunderland are on top with 40 points. We're 1 point behind them, but with a game in hand. And the final game of the season is at home at Sellers Park, okay, against Sunderland. So not only have we got a game in hand over them, we've also got to play them. So say it's in our own hands. Now, this could throw a massive financial incentive to Steve Parish and the rest of the board because they're going to have to invest a little bit. Jill, do us a favour for a second, mate. Would you just mute your mic a minute? I just want to try something. Just mute your phone if you can. Brilliant. And there's just a little noise in the background, Matt, and it's coming from that phone. Don't worry about it. So anyway, the Women's Championship is probably as exciting as it's ever going to get for us. And obviously all the big money, bigger money, is up in the WSL. Whilst I don't think we're ever going to compete with the Arsenals and the Chelseas up there, of course, that they are doing really, really well. So a massive, if any of you ladies are watching this evening, please let us know in the chat that you're there because we will welcome you on. You're probably back from Durham, I would guess. It was about a 6-hour coach drive, probably a bit, maybe on your way back. But just to see, if you are out there, ladies, give us a shout. Let Nigel know in the chat and we'll bring you on. So, Nigel, talk to me, unmute your mic and tell us about your day up on, where was it being played?
It's the Maidens Castle, which is it's a sports arena just outside of Durham, in the middle of nowhere. Beautiful scenic ground. I think I sent you a picture of the hills and the trees.
We did. Thanks for that.
It's, yeah. Sort of a telephone signal, not brilliant.
What about the game? Tell us a little bit about the game.
We ended up winning 5-1. We took the lead after 25 minutes. Annabelle Blanchard sort of banged one in, bang centre of the goal. And we were holding our own for that. About 10 minutes later, Felicity Gibbons took one hell of a knock and she was down for three, maybe 4 minutes. And then
It's one of those damn games where the referee, it was our player injured, but he gives an uncontested drop ball to Durham. And they went straight up the other end and sort of like scrambled one in into the bottom. So half time it was ones each. And we thought, oh well, we might come out with something. Second half, where the floodgates just opened. 58 minutes, Annabelle Blanchard got a second. 75 minutes, Molly May Sharp, she put one in. 85th minute, we were 4-1 up. Elsie Hughes, she put one in the bottom right-hand corner. And a minute into stoppage time, Hopcroft, she finished it off with a nice long-range shot from out the box into the bottom corner of the goal. And I say that finished 5-1. And just to put the record straight, over the two matches we played Durham this season, we have beaten them 14-2, which I think is quite a record.
And the guys that actually go and watch the Palace Ladies every week, and there's quite a few of them, and they do watch the show, call them Dirty Durham. They are, well, they're quite physical, Nodge.
Very physical.
They've got their label Dirty Durham for a reason.
Their number five, Wilson, she should be playing rugby league, not football. She is built like a house.
She speaks highly of you.
I'm sure she does. Yeah.
Right. So Palace Ladies' last three games on the 14th of April at the VBS Stadium, which is obviously Sutton. 2 o'clock kickoff at home against Birmingham City. Then they're away at the Dripping Pan. I know the Renf boys played that in the the Renf guys played down at the Dripping Pan a couple of times. That's away at Lewis on the 21st of April at 2 o'clock kickoff. And the home last
that
home
is game, that well, is the same day as we play West Ham.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
they're Sunday the 21st.
Yeah, ladies kick off at 2 o'clock. The guys kick off at 3 o'clock.
Right, thank you for that. And of course, the big one at the end of the season, Sunday the 28th of April, a 2 o'clock kickoff at Sellers Park. Let's pack it. I mean, if that is going to be the decider and everything hinges on that game, let's fill Sellers Park, ladies and gentlemen. It'd be great to have everybody there. A full stadium to back the ladies. And Tim Davies out in the chat, just correcting you on what you've just said. You said at least we are top two. I beg your pardon. I thought you said top with two games in hand. No, we are second place, but we are obviously one of the games in hand is going to be against Sunderland. So congratulations, ladies. Massive result today. Huge result.
I say this afternoon, we finished at just gone two. And the Sunderland match had only just started. So at the end of the match, there's about 30 Palace fans all huddled into one corner. So we're all chanting, we are top of the league, top of the league. They won 3-0. At the time, we were top of the league.
Apart from you, of course, all the other Palace fans that made the long trip up to the Durham, congratulations to you guys. I think that's a sterling effort. If you said there's about 30 Palace fans up there, I mean, that's a brilliant effort. Anyway, thank you, Nige. I'll leave you to it. Right, boys, we're going to kick off with yesterday's game, if you don't mind. Nige, if you can hit us with the lineup, I'd like your views, boys, on the lineup. I don't think we have a massive amount of choice. Have you got it there, Nige? Yeah, there you go. Henderson, Munoz. Surprised to see Munoz there. Following, he went off. I think it was at half time for Brazil the other night. Ward, captain. Anderson, Richards. Mitchell, Lerma, Walton, Ayu, Mateta and Eze. And the thing that concerned me a little bit was the bench, but Henderson was in goal, obviously, because of the forced injury to Sam Johnson, with Matthews on the bench, Tompkins, Klein, Ozo, Schlupp, Omar, Hughes, Amahada, and a young fella that I'd never even heard of on the bench. So, boys, your thoughts on the lineup? Jin, anything that came to you when you saw the lineup, or do you think that was as standard as it was going to be?
It's the best they could put out, I suppose. It was straightforward selection, as long as they were all fit. Obviously, Jordan out now for the rest of the season. But yeah, nah, you wouldn't have put MDLs in unless it was Elise or Gehi or something coming back from injury. But other than that, that's as good as we could put out.
Joe, I'm coming to you, mate. Your face is on mute, mate. News just provided, if you heard it just before we went on air, Joe, that Elise is likely to be back for the City game. So obviously we've got Bournemouth before that, but Elise is likely to be back for the City game. Do you bring him straight back in, or treat him with Cotton Wool for a while?
Well, yeah, I mean, if he's fit, he's got to play, isn't he? He's still our player. He's not a Chelsea player till the end of the season. So, if we don't play him, are we trying to protect him? We're trying to protect an investment. That'd be the only thing I can think of. I mean, you know, I'd like us to think that he would play for us. I mean, I've already had my thing, you know, say on it that I don't think he will. And if he does, it'll might be the last game of the season to say goodbye or whatever. But for me, I think it's pretty much well known that he won't be here next year. Would I play him? I'd like him to play, yeah.
Cool. Okay. And thank you, Paul Bristow, for correcting me. Roshan Murathan looks quite decent. He was a trialist at the start of the season. Yeah, he kept trialist B for a few games, but that's who he was. And I don't know whether he offered him a contract now. I assume he must have done if he's got named in the Premier League squad, but I didn't know that if we have. Paul, anything you would have done differently on the lineup?
No, Jim said it's the team. That's the team he wants at the moment. And bar Elise and Gaye and Johnston, who's obviously injured, we knew Henderson was going to come in. That's the side. And as you say, from the strength of the bench, you wouldn't look at any of those and think, yeah, they deserve a shot or they can come in above anyone else. So yeah, that's our starting lineup at the moment.
Where's Edward?
He got injured on the training camp, didn't he?
Any idea how long he's out for? This is ridiculous.
They seem to say 3 weeks. That was about 3 weeks ago, so he could be back in the next couple of games. But yeah, there was no real detail about that, but they didn't seem too worried. Whether that's just because they weren't worried about him being in the squad, who knows? But they're not panicking, shall we say.
And what about the Palace turnout up there? How many were up there, see, mate?
Yeah, no, we sold out. There was 3,000 up there, most of them in Hooters before the game. It's always a good turnout there, all for a good sing-song. And I think we went there with some optimism. I think there was a lot of we'd had the three-week break. Everyone's thinking the manager's got some time to put his ideas across and we can get some patterns of play going and things like that. So, yeah, it was quite an optimistic start to the game, really, there.
On that subject of the manager and his 3 weeks to do that, I'm going to come back to you on that a little bit later on because I've got my own thoughts on that. Anybody that did make the trip up to the City Ground yesterday, well done, because I know there was travel chaos and Paul, you saying pre-show the trains were a bit screwed up. So anybody that made that effort up there, fantastic effort all round, because I have to say I couldn't have done what you did yesterday. Paul, talk us through the game.
Yeah, so as I say, started quite brightly, passing the ball around, and Munoz and Mitchell were getting forward. All looked quite good. We scored a nice goal within 10 minutes. It was a nice ball through from Jefferson Lerma. And Eze slipped it over to Mateta, who took it well. I think he showed the keeper the eye as he was going down the bottom right and then went top left. So he's obviously confident at the moment, Mateta. And yeah, he took the goal really well. We were sort of kind of hopeful that would be the start of kicking on, because it's the fourth time in four games under Glasner that we've taken the lead, which is a good sign, but obviously we've not held on for most of those games. So we've got to learn to go for this killer second goal, because we have teams on the rack where we want them, and we let them off the hook. And we basically then, it felt like we sat back at that point. I was going to be a bit more critical of the team. When I was coming home last night, I was thinking about the performance. I've sort of mellowed a bit as the day has gone on, thinking about it. And I think we're trying to play this possession game. But Forest were up for it last night. You could tell yesterday, every time they lost the ball or we had the ball, they were on us on a flash. They were up for the game big time, which we didn't seem to be when we lost the ball to them. We sat off them and stuff. And whether that's going to be the way Glasner wants to play, it'd be interesting to see. But we were quite fortunate, I said to our friend Ian Noble at halftime, we were quite fortunate that Forest, although they had all the ball, they didn't really create anything. They didn't break through us, and I think that's a mixture of them not being a very good team, to be honest, and our defense was pretty solid. So the actual second best chance of the game was was to us, and we could have got that killer second goal. It was a lovely ball from Walton, through ball to Eze, and keeper made a good save, came out, to be fair to him. But with this system that we play, that's the kind of run we need. We're not playing wingers anymore, so we've got these inside forwards, and we need them to make forward runs so that the midfielders can pass on to them. Now, I don't think we're going to get that from IU. Eze is probably the only one. So we're really crying out for Elise to be back in this team, to be honest. But so we could have got the second goal. We didn't. We ended up keeping the lead at halftime. It all felt reasonably good on the basis that they weren't making any problems. Henderson didn't really have any saves to make. They just had a lot of pressure around our box. So it was hopeful. We were hoping to come out and sort of change that, but we didn't. We came out, and again, I don't think we deliberately sit back. I think it's a case of just whether it's the confidence in the team or whether it's just human nature when we're trying to hold on to things. But we just let teams come on to us. And their goal was almost an inevitability. And there was a few people in the crowd sort of blaming Henderson for the goal. And I'm not sure. It's one of those tough ones. It's a tough one. I think I tried to look at it the other way. If he'd have come steaming out to this lobbed ball over the top, and then been lobbed, everyone would have been like, well, you're an idiot. You should have stayed back. And so I'm a little less critical than him, I think of it.
Let me in. Paul, let me in. Because you know why. I had a message during the game yesterday from my mate sitting next to you. So, Gerald, your thoughts on... It's always Chris Wood, by the way, isn't it? I mean, I know you've been an admirer of his for years. For a long time. Yeah, you have. You have, in fairness. You've always said, and he always bloody scores against us. I remember you doing that years ago. Your thoughts on the goal, because you were critical of the goalkeeper.
Hugely. Look, when you're a goalkeeper, you get to use your hands. You get to come out and legally smash whoever's in front of you. You're not going to get it. It's still almost, goalkeepers are still almost old school players. They're the only player that can come out, take out whoever they want. And then unless it's a player singularly clear through, right, as long as he gets near the ball. Now, he can jump. Chris Wood didn't jump for that ball. Watch him. You watch Henderson. He goes to come and stops. If he comes when he started, he smashes him or he gets above him with his hands. He does not score that goal. He does not score that goal. I'm telling you. And again, for me, I can't understand how he's got, you know, he absolutely frustrates the life out of me. He gave himself no chance. He's got the shortest arms in the league, hasn't he? He must have.
No, it's Pickford.
Oh, I mean, I wanted to start smashing my furniture up yesterday. We literally had that game in the palm of our hands. Can I just say something about their team? I think that they probably got three players that would walk into our side. Gibbs White, he's a great player, and on his days, almost unplayable. He has terrorised. They're very similar to us. I don't think we should have gone up there and had anything that we should be winning that game. You know, they're a decent side on their day, as they showed against Arsenal earlier in the season. You know, when they're up for it, they're a very good side. It's obviously something that, you know, they need to be, I don't know whether it's a better coach or whatever to bring them on, but they've got an unbelievable striking lineup. I mean, I'd love to have any of their front three would get in our side. Would definitely get in our side.
That's quite interesting.
Origi would get in our side. 100% Divock Origi would get in our side. Chris Wood should be getting our side. He scores goals. He's a proven goal scorer in the Premier League. So, that's two.
I'll keep your powder dry because I want to talk to Jim. Jim, your thoughts on what Gerald said about the goal. He was critical of the goalkeeper. He was critical of Henderson. Is he right to be?
Well, I see comments, sort of, obviously, I didn't see the game. I've watched the highlights. But before that, I see comments, social media stuff, Facebook. Maybe it was Jail saying Keita was crap. I watched that. I watched that game. I've played a lot of games at a high level. and the keeper was not at fault. Not at fault at all. It weren't, it's one of them headers looping. He just got his head to it. He didn't know where it was going, but he's a good centre forward, so he's got the direction of where the goal is, and it looped over the top of him. No, I don't think he could have come and got that at all. In fact, there's two centre halves there that let the player in between them. So have a look at them first before you look at the keeper. He's got a free header. So that shouldn't happen.
See, and this is why, you, ladies and gentlemen, you're tuned in to Red and Blue Review. Gel says he was at fault. Jim says he wasn't. Okay, so the only way to deal with this is fight! I think he's Brit, and that's what we do the show for, because I don't want a bunch of nodding dogs all agreeing with each other, okay? Because it's a boring thing, and the whole idea is we have different sort of opinions. Paul, be the deciding factor on the goal.
Well, as I said at the start, I didn't think it was his fault. I think he could have, if he look at it this way, if he'd come running out and he looped it over him, everyone would have criticised him for that. So I think he probably, to me, as I said, he did the right thing. He's got other defenders there. It just was a perfectly placed header. He didn't mean it, as Jim says, but if it had been 6 inches lower, he might have got it, whatever. I think it's just one of those goals. It wasn't a swinging ball coming out or coming near him. The ball was always away from him because it was coming in. So if he comes flying out to it, the keeper's Wood's just going to get taken out. But he's got to take the player out if he comes out for that, and he could well give away a penalty doing that. So
I'm just going to come back in again. I know you haven't finished the game yet, Gel. You're on mute, mate. Just to let you know, Mukhtar Butter has actually said his money is on Jim in the fight. Okay, over to you, mate.
Oh, I am right. I'm a bit. Little got bigger fists than him, mate. Look, watch the goal, right, and watch him. He takes a step and he hesitates. That's what did it. He hesitated and it gave him the chance. If he jumps as high as he can with his arms up in the air, he don't get that. It's his hands. But anyway, it is what it is. So, I mean, the other thing as well is he had three shots to deal with. And almost most of our goalkeepers in the last 25 years would have caught those, and he's palming them away. He doesn't seem to want to. Maybe it's a coaching these days. He doesn't seem to be wanting to catch the ball or keep it under any kind of control, but to try and get rid of it. The only thing I will say that he did do, and this is what proves my point a little bit, is the three times that he was called on to come for corners, he got a fist on all three. Now, and they were on top of him the whole of they, you know, they've sussed out that when he plays, he can be crowded out and you can score goals against him.
I think you're right to raise that point about the punches. I think he did punch three times, and he didn't cause us any problems by doing it. I think we were quite critical of who was it? It was Guaita for a while. He had a bit of a phase of doing that, not claiming the ball, but clearing the ball with punches, and then the ball dropping to the opposition attackers and scoring against us. I mean, in fairness to Hendo, and I think we should be positive about Hendo because obviously he's all we got now for the rest of the season. So I think we need to, you know, cut him a little bit of slack and start supporting the guy a little bit. I think you're right to raise that point, Gel. He did punch where he possibly could have claimed. Paul, carry on with the rest of the game, mate.
As I say, on that one, I agree with Joe. Something I was going to say. He does seem to, sometimes you need a goalkeeper to come and catch the ball or catch a shot just to take the pressure off. But he does seem to punch the ball every time, which, as you say, you get the ball out, but it doesn't withdraw any pressure usually. But as you say, with him, we've got him for the rest of the season. I think he's a good goalkeeper. And I think he suffered at the end of the Hodgson era in that the defence was playing badly. We were conceding set pieces left, right and centre. And there was a mix of lack of confidence here and there. So hopefully with a new manager and a new defensive setup, it might make him a bit more comfortable. But yeah, so we conceded the goal. And then, which was a bit frustrating, we then started to play again. We started to pass the ball around. We kept the ball. We showed some attacking intent. The fullbacks were coming forward. We created some good chances. And, Ebbs had another good shot. We actually had some quite interesting set pieces. We were taking all our corners short, which is a new one. And we were doing some quite nice little moves there. They've obviously been working on those in training, which is good to see. And nearly got a couple of goals out of them. But after that, as I say, Forest didn't really cause us any problems. They had a lot of the ball and stuff, but it was us. If anyone was going to score, it was us at that point. And yeah, in the last minute, we could have stolen it when we hit the post. So it was ultimately a point's not a bad result, as Jill says. They're not the worst team in the world. And they obviously were a bit galvanised yesterday with their points deduction, so they were right up for it. And a 1-1 draw, probably we'd have probably again taken at the start of it. It's just a shame that it's another game where we haven't held on to a lead.
Well, funny you should say that. While Nick's not here, I don't think he's back yet. Oh, he is back. Jim, would you have taken a point at the beginning of play yesterday up there?
Yeah. I mean, the same as Luton. You know, you can't let them two teams beat you, especially the position that we're all in. So a point was a good point, but I think it was still probably same as Luton, 2 points lost.
The only thing I will say about that, and I have said this because we've, you know, obviously been in the lower half of the table before, we've generally had a little bit of a sprint away, and finished more mid-table. But the amount of, and I'll use the term black eyes that we've given other teams that we were supposed to have lost to, and that we've nicked points or nicks, we've been absolutely thrashed and won 1-0. They're the kind of games, and that's what's been happening to us a little bit. Like Luton, you know, I mean, we literally thrashed them 1-1. You know, it's just, and yesterday, I thought yesterday was a fair result. And again, like, that's why I asked the question. I would have taken 1-1 all day, every day up there, because they were up for it. You could see that. I just thought it'd be interesting to see whether you would have taken that ball and you, Nick.
But yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the thing about it was, Gladson said, I mean, it's just another game used up as far as I'm concerned, and another point nearer safety. So that's the way you've got to look at it. So it's another game that they can't claim three on, and it's another, you know, the games are coming thick and fast now in the running. And Gladson said after the game, he said, I was told a point away in the Premier League is a good point, so we must respect a point here in Nottingham Forest. He said, because they're in very good shape, especially at home. We took the lead and had three or four good chances, but we didn't decide the game. He keeps using the word decide. One needs to correct him on that. He means score, obviously. There were moments in the game where we were under pressure, and in this phase, they scored. Joe.
Yeah, just quickly, I just see Paul Bristow said, Joe, you'll be even more disappointed if we have to play Remy Matthews this season. Henderson is all we have now. Now, right at this second, I can't remember his name, but who's the kid that came in from the under-18s, the under-21s against Brighton for his ball debut?
Joe Whitworth.
There we go. So I wouldn't be frightened. I mean, he had a great game.
I think he's on loan.
No, he's on loan. No, what I'm saying, my point is that he's out on loan. So our number three is Remy Matthews. So would I be disappointed to see him play? No, I wouldn't. You know, I'm a massive advocate of getting bringing the kids through. And I'm hoping that's what, you know, next year I think is our make or break for quite a few of our younger players.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at next year in a minute. Paul, I understand it's not on loan.
He's not on loan. He came in for a couple of games last year, and he did okay. He was in a cauldron couple of games. He was at Brighton away and Arsenal away, so he was certainly thrown in. I mean, he's a good goalkeeper. He's a bit short to make it as a Premier League goalkeeper. But the other guy we've got chat Owen Goodman, who's on loan, I think, at Colchester at the moment. He's getting rave reviews in League.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's talk in the papers today they want to ship him out to a higher league club on loan next year. So there's obviously a couple in reserve as well as Remy Matthews.
Okay. And have we finished on the game?
Yeah, now we finished that. So happy with the point as it was. And as Oliver Glasner said, it's no bad result there. I mean, Liverpool only just scraped a 98th minute win there the other week. So I think it's as Jim says, another game that they can't gain any points on us, any ground. So yeah, I think we can.
I think they were evenly matched, if I'm brutally honest with you. And I think if you think about it, you know, they're very similar, as Joe quite rightly said, they're very similar to us. And look at those stats, that about bears it out, really. Corners 4 against 6, fouls 12 against 14, there's nothing in it. P- possession. You'd expect the home team to have a little bit more possession, which they did. Shots on target, we had three, they had five. And, you know, Eze should have done better with a couple of them. And I think that's the interesting thing. Oh, interesting stat from Paul Bristow. Elise and Eze's stat. They have been on the pitch together for 359 minutes this season. That's 1 minute short of just four 90-minute games. And in that time, they've had 10 goal involvements between them. Paul, you need to get out more or go and earn some more money on that bloody cab of yours, mate. Right, and fixtures coming up. So let's have a look at the last fixtures of the season before we move on to a couple of other bits and pieces. Fixtures coming up. Now, don't forget, these fixtures are going to be coming thick and fast right the way through the end. And thank you to John Knox in the chat, who's just reminded anybody that does Super Six. I normally send out a reminder to our lot, okay, in the questions crew. But Super Six, there is another round, full round of Super Six that starts at 7:30 on Tuesday evening. So if you do the Super Six, please make sure you get your entries in. Do them tomorrow. Bank on any Monday. You'll sit on your fat asses tomorrow while some of us are working. So do your Super Six then. And then here we go with the rundown towards the end of the season. So on Tuesday night, 7:45, which is the 2nd of April, we are away at Bournemouth. Paul, you going to the Bournemouth game?
Yeah, I'll be there.
And how many tickets we got for that? Probably about seven.
Yeah, we only get about 1,200 tickets because it's such a small ground. So they go pretty quick, to be fair.
Yeah. Then I suppose that I'm about to get slated in the chat, guys. Fill your boots. I'm about to say something to you in the on air. Okay, you can in the chat. You can slaughter me for. Our next game is then at home to Man City. And that's on the 6th of April, 12:30 kickoff, a lunchtime kickoff against City. Come on, City, beat Palace. And I've just said it because after what happened today in the Man City and Arsenal game, that's absolutely opened the door for those Scouse toe rags. Okay. And I think that makes Liverpool favourite for the Premier League. And I couldn't bear the thought on Liverpool. Anybody else, Arsenal, Man City, I don't care who it is. But not that lot. So then we've got home to Man City on that one. Followed by on the 14th of April, ironically, we're away at Anfield. Come on, Palace. Let's stuff the bastards. Then the 21st of April, they are really coming thick and fast. 1, 2, 3. That's six games in April. Bloody hell. Home to West Ham. Not too sure about that one. Another home game against Newcastle on the 24th. And away at Fulham. Boat trip, Jim Cannon. Bring your ears back, okay? Boat trip. Okay, I did tell you about it. Hang on a minute, Jill. Right, did I text you, Jim? Because if I didn't text you, I meant to remind you the boat trip is coming up.
Yeah, you did. You did remind me. I haven't made a reminder.
Get your bloody finger out and say yes, Nick, okay? And
I like going by a better form of traffic.
Mate. And what more could you want? Is a bunch of toe rags blowing smoke up your backside and Philpott on the microphone. I mean,
no, I don't want that. That's why I probably won't go.
Oh, because I'm on the microphone or the other lot. Go on, Jill, you're going to say something. You're on mute, mate.
Six games in April. How many points do you think we'll get? I'm going to stick my neck out and say seven. I think we get 7 points from that. I think we get three from West Ham. I think we get three from Bournemouth. And I think we get one from Fulham.
Interesting. Well, you heard it from Jack and Jell. He's just asked you lot the question out there in Facebook land and YouTube land. How many points out of those six games? 5 points if we're lucky, says Tony. Thank you, Tony. Paul, what do you think?
I think we'll hopefully get a draw at Bournemouth. And they're a tough nut to crack, I think, at the moment. But West Ham at home and Newcastle. I'm not too worried about Newcastle at home. I think they're, you know, got some injuries and not playing the best. I know they scored a few yesterday. Got some dodgy decisions to help them get that, by the way. But yeah, obviously the two big ones, City and Liverpool, are probably write-off games, even though we've got the point at City earlier in the season. And Fulham, you never know. Fulham are very up and down. So 7 points I'd be more than happy with, to be honest.
Well, Jim, you want to add anything to that?
No, I would be quite happy with 6 points. I think that will keep us safe for next season.
And I was about to make that exact point, mate. I think you're right. 6 or 7 points out of that lot, we're done. we're done. We're not in any threat anyway, are we, really? I know we're still down in that bottom area and there's a bit of a gap between us. And who's above us? Is it Bournemouth? Is it above us?
Yeah. They're about eight above us now. But you're sort of going back to tempting fate here, but Oldham-esque sort of stuff, really. I mean, you look at Luton, you look at Forest, they've got to win, even if we stay as we are, they've got to win three more games than us if we get nothing. And they've only won like four or five all season. So it'd be nice to wrap it up, but they'd rather be in our shoes.
Let's give some of these people a name. Monty says we're going to get six. John Thompson. JC, I didn't realise you were out there, mate. How you doing, buddy? Nice to see you. You're saying 7 points. I think most of the people are saying 7 points. Tony Quinn says we only need 2 points, 32 points, and we'll stay up this season. And you know what? Again, I'm making something like right, because I did say early, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, 4 or 5 weeks ago, I reckon it'll be in the low 30s, keeps us in the division, because you can't see the three below us actually getting into the 30s. So I make you right, mate. And Rob, again, makes another good point. Everton have got another points deduction to come. Sadly, unfortunately, I don't think Everton will actually come into it. I think it will be one of the other four, and Everton will probably get away with it, which is why they probably won't appeal the second points deduction. Anyway, so let's have a look at a couple of other things, if I can. Other teams around the divisions or around the club, the under-21s were due to play Spurs on whenever that was, on Friday, but that game got postponed due to the waterlogged pitch. The under-18s played away at West Brom, and they were going down 1-0 for a lot of the game, but Palace under-18s ran out 2-1 winners. That was on Saturday in the under-18s Premier League. And the women, as we know, cracking result today, away at Durham, 5-1 result. And we've already seen their next games. Again, massive congratulations to the girls. Let's do a bit on the other players, if we can, the lone players. Luke Plange has joined. Now, if you notice, Luke has been in and around the first team for obvious reasons, to cover the injuries. But they've decided to ship him out on loan to HUK Helsinki until the 1st of January 2025. He joined Palace from Derby, and Plange was immediately loaned back to Derby for the remainder of that season. And then he was on loan at RWD Molenbeek. He hasn't really cut it, has he, Paul? Have you seen much of him?
I don't think he's played a minute in the first team, has he? So I do find it hard to judge a player when you never actually see him. He's not pulled up. He went on loan to Carlisle at the start of the season and he scored a couple of goals. Didn't pull up any trees by all accounts. But so, yeah, he doesn't look like he's going to be an answer to much. But then again, if you haven't actually given him that chance, it's hard to sort of say.
Boys, I want to move it on now, if you don't mind. Go on, Jill. You're on mute.
Yeah, just quickly. I don't take a huge amount of notice. Obviously, it's only through you guys, as many of us do, that you know that we hear about the 18s and 21s. But just quickly to say that someone said him if they ever see him. But Billy Eastwood, I always keep an eye out on his career at Palace. He's the 18s goalkeeper. Because his dad was a really, really good friend of mine for a very long time, 30-odd years, I knew Dave, before he passed. And I was one of the first people that he told me that he turned down Fulham when Billy was 8 to go to Palace. And because obviously, they, you know, the projections they do with kids and everything, my mate Dave was 6'4", a hefty weight as well. But it's like Bill never gets his weight. But they projected him when he was 8 years old to be 6'4". And I think he's getting there. Getting there around that height. So, but yeah, just to say that, you know, there are people still keeping an eye out from afar at certain players. But yeah, it's nice to see that after all these years, you know, it's got to be coming up for 10 years now that young Billy Eastwood's been at Palace. So I just wanted to say that I've been meaning to say it for a long time and just kept forgetting. We get carried away with the shows, but I just thought it'd be, you know, just a nice thing to say that some of us remember when he started, you know, when he was very, very young. And a shout out to his dad, rest in peace, Dave.
Absolutely. Jim, I'm going to ask you a question on loans in a minute, okay? And there's a reason for it. And for everybody else watching, just have a listen to this list that I'm about to read out for you. And notice the amount of times I'm about to say did not feature, sat on the bench, came off the bench, okay? These are our list of loan players that are out at the moment. David Boateng stayed on the bench for Dundee, who won 2-1 away at St Johnstone. Killian Phillips was not in the match squad for Aberdeen in the home game against Ross County. Owen Goodman conceded just one goal for Colchester United, who won 2-1 at home. Kofi Barmer played a full match and was booked in the 52nd minute. John Kamani Gordon played for the first 75 minutes for Wimbledon's 1-1 home draw against Harrogate. Sean Grean, here we go again, stayed on the bench for the entire match against Carlisle, and Ademola Ola Adebomi came off the bench in the 69th minute for Wigan. No matches for Teo Adramola and Malcolm Ebiobi, who play for Texas Molenbeek. The team has not played this week. And Luke Plange, as we've just discussed. Now, I thought the whole point of them, Jim, to send them out on loan is to get them, nearer ready, first team ready. Why are they sitting on the bench?
Well, first team ready might not be our first team. It's these lads, you named a lot of players there. 90% of them probably won't have a career at Crystal Palace, but by going out on loan, getting the experience, like the lad you just mentioned at Aberdeen, is it Boateng? It's in front of 10, 15,000 people in another atmosphere. It's good experience for these younger players. And that's what it's all about. You would like them all to play, but it's not going to work out that way. The kids learning the trade. And I think the whole reason they go out is just purely for the experience. Rather than playing under 21 football, they're playing in front of 10 or 15,000 people, or they're involved in front of 10 or 15,000 people. I think it makes them grow up quite a lot quicker than they would be playing in front of one man and his dog for the under-21s.
I'm going to ask you a personal question here, if you don't mind. I mean, I know you came down from Scotland at an early age. Did you ever have to go out on loan at all, or did you go, or did you just crack straight into the first thing?
No, I was too good.
Yeah, I guess that, yeah. So was the loan facility available in when you were playing?
Yeah. I heard them talking a few times about different players going out on loan. And again, it's just to gain experience. In them days, it was different in the sense that they've got tons of players now that are never going to make the first team that they're at, but they'll go on and have decent careers. In my day, you had like 14 apprentices. We did have a reserve team. That was how it worked. First team players come out, youth team players went in the reserves. So, but it was slightly different. And probably they were looking for more players to get in the first team in my era than what they are now. But you've got to remember, everything now is about finance. So they send these players out, they play a few games, they sell them for a couple of million. I mean, that's giving the club a lot of money back for what they've spent maybe in the last 10 or 15 years from when they were 10 years of age.
And they're saying that the academy is costing about 5 million quid a year to run. So, but they only need to sell a couple of those players, that you just said, a couple of mil a piece to make it financially viable. So it's not a bad thing, I would think.
No, I mean, that we've got, as you say, a very expensive academy. And ideally, you want your academy players to come into the first team. And down the line, you're probably going to sell them for 20 or 30 million. But it's never going to happen that way. But they will then sell them on to another club. And these kids will go on and have a decent career as a professional footballer. And the club will get their money back for what they've spent on them and maybe a bit more.
I'm just going to answer. Lord Glance, I can see you out there. Evening, mate. I hope you're well, buddy. You just asked a question in chat. How many players have we got out on loan? It's a difficult one, mate, because we don't get the entire list. It's That list that I just read out from had 12 names on it, but we don't know the lesser players. I'm sure there are some lesser players. Is that true that the Paddy tried to send Nick Philpott out on loan and support back in? Yeah, that's you, Paul Bristow. Right, boys, we're going to change the subject again, if you don't mind. We're going to be looking ahead now. Now, obviously, we know that Glasner's coming in and he's going to want to make... I mean, ideally, he would have come in this summer. That's what was arranged. The plan was he was going to come in and it's going to be a bit of a rebuild. We know that. We know that there's every opportunity so far for Elise to go, possibly Eze, possibly Gihi, even possibly Anderson. They've all been linked with moves away in the last window, so there's no reason why it can't happen again. But that's not who we're going to talk about here. We're going to be talking about the list of players that are out of contract this summer, so in June. We're only talking about a few weeks away now, in June. Ladies and gentlemen out in Facebook or YouTube land, this is to you as well. I would like to know, in or bin out of this next list? So, Jeffrey Schlupp, Will Hughes, Jairo Redabel, Joel Ward, Nathaniel Klein, James Tompkins, Nathan Ferguson and Remy Matthews. Just to give you a little bit of context on that, Remy Matthews is on $5,000 a week and Nathaniel Klein is on $80,000 a week. James Tompkins is on $50,000 a week. Will Hughes and Jairo are both on $35,000 a week and Jeffrey Schlupp is on $50,000 a week. Now, if you were to add up their annual salaries there, three or four of those players would give you the opportunity to bring in some well-paid players for the squad for next season. In your views, ladies and gentlemen, out of that list, in or bin, please? I'd like to know your thoughts. Jill, I'm going to come to you first because I know your contracts are what you like and they float your boat a little bit. And also on that list, I'm not going to add them to this list. Okay, we're not talking about them tonight. Tyrick, Odson and Jordan are all out of contract the following summer. We'll park that for now. Okay, Jill, out of that list that you've seen, who would you keep? Who would you bin? And who would you keep?
Ward and Hughes. Keep, and just quickly. So the three first team players. Tyrick Mitchell was one of the better left backs in the Premier League. If we have no aspiration on keeping him, that's scandalous. So he will get a new deal. 100%, he'll get a new deal, and he'll get a new deal for either staying or going. But that's what we would have to do. Who were the other two players? Henderson.
No, Jordan Ayew and Otten Edwell.
I know he's going to really annoy Jim about Ayew, but I think that by the time we bring, you know, if our younger players aren't going to step up, if Jezrek Saki isn't going to step up, should the absolute unbelievable happen and Elise doesn't leave, then no.
Okay, now, Joe, park those three for the minute. It's that list that I want your views on.
Yeah, well, I would keep Ward and Hughes. That's it.
Just those two out of all of them, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I really like Reederville, but it's obvious that, you know, I'm starting to come around to the view of many, many other people. But, you know, the last three managers, four managers, they haven't liked him. I really like him. I think the way he passes the ball is good. I think, you know, he's never come in and massively let us down. But I'm not too sure whether he's actually too chilled. But in saying that, look at Walton. I mean, he's almost laying down. You know, so I don't know. I don't know why his face doesn't fit. I really like him, but if it's to the detriment of, you know, money towards the club, we're not going to get a significant investment coming in without a lot of players going out, I think that would be... I definitely wouldn't keep Tompkins. I mean, I just think he's too slow. I think the Premier League is just too fast for him now. But we would have to buy. I think we need to buy two new centre backs anyway as cover.
Thank you, boys. Thank you, Joe. I'm coming to you next. Okay, but before I do, Tom Clark Samuel in the chat. He made that graphic that Nigel kindly put up for us a second ago. Tom, thank you for all your hard work you do for us. please check him out on our Instagram account. He works tirelessly for us. Right, Jim, I'm committed. Oh, there's the Instagram account. Right there. Jim, I'd like your views on that list, please, because you've seen that list. You had a bit of time pre-show to digest it. Out of that list of going out of contract this year, who would you keep?
Well, when you look at that list, you're looking at are they first team material. They're only ever really going to be squad players. And we have got a very small squad as it is. So you've got to be careful if you suddenly think, like, well, he's no good, he's not going to play, because they only play bit part. And sometimes they do really well, but they're not like your consistent regular players. Ferguson and Tompkins, to me, they're just injury prone. Ferguson, I mean, he's supposed to be a really good player. I've never seen him play. He's always injured. Tompkins the same. I think we've got enough cover at centre-half. We know that we've got Wardy, Gehi, Anderson, Richards. We probably need another centre-half, but I think there's probably better players than Tompkins about. And I'd probably keep Klein, Ward, Hughes and Schlapp. Purely all good squad players that will... I mean, Wardy's playing regular and he's got a new lease of life now playing as a centre-half. And, you know, if one of them other two players, Anderson, Gehi, suddenly go, like, you never know at the end of the season who's going to stay and who's not, then he'll probably play another season. I don't think, as a right-back, I wouldn't sort of be looking at him too much, but in that back three, yeah, it's a much easier position for him. So there's four players there I would keep. You've got to remember, the squad player. We're not looking at them players and saying, well, they're not going to play every week. No, of course they're not. But you need them. You know, whatever you think about them, you need them in your squad. Otherwise, you haven't got cover. Ideally, you would like all the type of players that Manchester City have got. 11 players out and 11 in, and there's no difference to how they play. We haven't got the funds to do that, so you've got to be careful.
Interesting. You, out of the three you said keep, two of them are the higher earners, Schlapp and Klein. And Paul made the point in the chat just there that Klein, 80 grand a week is a bit of a luxury player. We could finance something else with that 80 grand. Paul, your thought. Oh, God, Jim.
Who knows what these players earn? I mean, can you tell me categorically 100% that is their wages? Because I've been involved with that club for donkey's years and I don't know what the wages are.
That's not information supplied from the club. The information...
Well, it's hearsay, isn't it? He's got to be on 80 grand.
No. It's a little bit more than that. It's a little bit more than
that. I doubt very much Kleiny would be on 80 grand. Doubt very much. If he is, good luck to him. But I don't go in with all that sort of, this is what people earn. To me, that social media, Facebook crap that people put on, suddenly that 10 grand a week is 100 grand a week in 3 months' time.
Well, there is a listing on transfermarket.com.
I still don't take any notice of that. That's one guy giving his opinion again about what wages are.
Yeah, and I think, and I take your point, and I probably make you right, because if you look at this, Joel Ward has been at the club for 150 years, and according to this, he's on 35 grand a week now.
No, he's on more than that.
He's on more than that. Exactly, precisely. So I make you right, Paul. Your thoughts on that line, that list?
Well, as Jim says, your retain list is basically determined by who you're going to buy, because if you don't bring in another centre back, you can't really just release another one. So, as you said, it's going to be a rebuild. I'm sure Glasner's been promised funds. The fact that we were talking to him before Christmas, I imagine the two signings in January were with his blessing and who he wanted, with Walton and Munoz. So you've brought in a midfielder and you've brought in a right back, so you can probably let some of them go. As we say, Ferguson, really, there can be no justification in giving him a new contract. He might be a really nice guy and all that, but he's played 8 minutes in the 4 years he's been at the club. So they can let him go. And to, as we said earlier, Gyro, I think Gyro, he's never let us down, but he's a squad player. He's always third. He's going to be third choice for every position he can play. Whenever there's a position he can play, left back, right back, midfield, there's always someone above him in the squad list who's still not the first choice. So they're the two I could probably happily release. The rest, as you say, is what happens. If we sell Mark Gahey, then you might suddenly think, well, perhaps we do need to keep James Tompkins. If you bring a younger guy, and then you can get rid of him. So they're the two I would probably get rid of. I'm not a big fan of Jeff Schlupp, so I could quite happily see him depart the club. But again, if you're not bringing in someone to cover that role of his, then you're sort of shooting yourself in the foot a little bit. So it all depends who we bring in. But certainly of those players, most of them can still do a job on an emergency basis, as we've just said. They're not going to be starting games. They're going to come on for injuries, a few games here and there. So yeah, the two I said I would get rid of, and like you say, the others can then be picked off if you bring a replacement in for them on a first team basis or as a squad basis.
Joe, I'm coming to you right now. When you come off mute, Paul Holden in the chat, you just asked, will Ollie be backed? Mr. Glasnow be backed? I'm coming back to that point in 1 minute after Joe gives us his thoughts.
Yeah, I just think as well with the players that are further down the pecking order, that they are, you know, we do for two games a season, you know, we're in both cups, so we do need a different side just for those two games, because I don't know how serious Mr. Glasner's going to take the cups, but if it's been like the last sort of 5 or 6 years, then we just need spare players for two games, because we'll be out of both of them. But yeah, it'd be nice if we were to. I mean, we have got other players, you know, coming back from injury, that long term injuries that we, you know, so that puts, when it comes to the midfield, it really does push Riedewald down. I say unfortunate, because I really like him. Yeah, again, Jesh looks one of them players. He's either an 8 out of 10 or 4. It's such a conundrum for Palace, because, you know, if he goes, I'm not worried, it's his career, but, you know, if he goes, it won't bother me too much, as long as we get, you know, one out, one in. That's what we need to do. And I'd rather bring in a 23-year-old, and again, you know, doing due diligence, which is what we're doing, and picking out players like, you know, Wharton for the Championship, I wouldn't be too disappointed to see players like him coming in, covering players, experienced players going out.
Paul?
I never like to pick on players, and as I say, I know I just cut Schlupp out a bit there, but I always judge a player. But if you suddenly heard tomorrow a certain player was out for the rest of the season, let's say you heard Schlupp was out for the season, how worried would you be?
I don't think you would be, really, would you?
And that's almost a guide of how important a player is to a squad. Because you could at least say, well, if you said it about Klein, you could say, oh, well, that's a bit unfortunate, because then he's our cover for this. But if Schlupp was out for the season, if Riedewald was out for the season, it's not a big deal. And that to me is sort of almost a guide on who you can need and rely on.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing to bear in mind is, obviously, we have the new stand that's going to be starting, I would assume, pretty soon. And we've had some further investment or a loan from another group of Yanks. And I would presume that's going to be going towards the extra funding of the new stand, because obviously prices and the price of the stand has gone up from whatever it started off at 90 million, then 100 million, now it's 150 million. So that money will probably go towards the building of the stand. I get the distinct impression, if you listen to some of Glasner's comments over the last couple of days, he was talking about the building of the new squad or what's going to happen in the close season. Are you already looking at players for next season? And he just laughed. He just, of course we are. Now, if you cast your mind back to the Hodgson days, it was always, I leave that sort of thing to the GM and my director of football. Yeah, obviously I do get asked on it, but that's not what Glasner said this week. Glasner said, yes, of course we are. We are already working hard on next season and what we need in what positions that we need them in, which I thought was quite an encouraging, positive thought process. You know, for those of you out there in Facebook land and YouTube land, I think it's very important. I'm sorry about my phone in the background. It'll go off in a few seconds. I think it's going to be positive because we've got to change these players. We've got to change these players. And you know, yeah, their contracts are either going to be renewed or they're not. So that means we're going to have, I think, I would guess somewhere in the 6-7 new signings in the summer. I don't know what quality. A lot of it, as Gerald rightly says, is to do with what who goes out. And somebody said, I can't remember who was in the chat a minute ago, how do you feel about Elise going? Well, that's our business model. Elise has got to go. I'd be amazed if he's still a Palace player come the start of next season. That is our business model. What are we buying for, Paul? Was it 8 million quid?
Yeah.
Eight million quid.
And we're going to on a release clause.
And a release clause, nobody knows what a release clause is set up. It was at 30 million quid. Then they renegotiated that. And somebody's going to come in. There's going to be a queue of clubs triggering his release clause. Then we get into a bidding war. Now, let's say you go for 70 million quid.
You won't get a bidding war because he's got this clause. So if five clubs all come in and match that clause, he's got the choice. You're never going to get more money.
It'll be the player's choice. And the player will want to go. Rob Cranford will say Parrish is on the phone having a pop at Nick. But there you go. It's going to be an exciting summer. Folks, yeah, we're in a position where it's going to be one of those summers where it's going to be a lot of bring and buy sale, I'm telling you. Yeah, go on, John.
Jim, would you take Aaron Bissaka back?
Would I?
Wages.
I don't think he's going to be on that.
What I've seen of him lately, because he'd been out for a while, he looks a different player over the last half a dozen games that I've seen him play. He's sort of getting in, he's almost doing the Trent Alexander. He's sort of going inside and he's moving about. He's obviously a great defender, but it costs us too much money. We won't pay 50 million for a fullback. I would take him back for 15, 20 million, but they're going to want their money back on him.
Jim, they offer you 50 million quid and you'll pull your boots back on, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I get to the halfway line, though.
Cool.
The other thing with AW, 6 months ago, we'd all taken him back. But obviously, we bought Munoz now, who's the right wing-back player. So unless Wan-Bissaka's going to play on the left, which isn't his net. He's doing okay there when he plays there, but it's not his natural position. So, yeah, he's probably not on the list anymore. I mean, in terms of transfers, I think Glasner will have a lot more say in what's coming in than Roy did. I think with Absolutely. Roy, they were always saying... I think with Roy, they were basically saying, well, let's try not spend any money because we'll give it to the next manager because he was always short-term, wasn't he? Now we have a manager who I think they're hoping and planning for long-term that he'll need to be more involved in who's coming in, and I think he will be.
Excellent point, and well made. Well made. That's why you're on the show, mate. Guys,
are we going to keep Mateta?
There's an interesting one. Are we going to keep Mateta, boys?
Yeah.
He deserves it at the moment.
He's 100% better than what he was 4 months ago, and if he carries on like that, he's a handful. Well, you need better players around him once we get you at least back and people like that. But he looks a decent player. Looks a decent, holding it up well. I mean, I'm always giving him stick, but I can't anymore, and I'm grateful for that because I want to see him do well. It's a complete transformation. What or whoever did something to him 4 months ago. He's totally different.
Tony Quinn says in the chat, Jim, he said that Glasner will keep him and ship out Edward. And again, I'll make you right. But we need somebody to play alongside, you know, to come in for a boom, boom, boom as well. Right, boys, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Look at the time. We've overrun. I thank you very much for your contributions, lads. You've been brilliant. Really interesting conversation. Everybody that's contributed in the chat, thank you so much. I do go back and read every single one of them. It's not possible to read every one out as it's going through on the screen. But I am grateful, and you made it a very interesting conversation. Thank you very much. Boys, Nigel, when's the next show? As if by magic. We're doing a double header. It's the Bournemouth and Man City game, and we're doing it on Monday, the 8th of April at 8 o'clock. I presume that's me in the chair. I hope it's me in the chair. I'm sure Noble will be back in showing his face at some point. But thanks, Nigel. Take that down, mate. If there's anything, did I miss anything out, lads? Paul, was there anything else we were going to talk about? Oh, I'll tell you what it was. I know what it was. good news to finish on, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Olise should be back in contention. We heard pre-show for the Man City game. And also, so will Jedrin Rucksacki. Positive news. Boys, I thank you. Ladies and gentlemen out of Facebook land, on behalf of myself, Nick, and this wonderful team of guys, I wish you a very happy Easter and enjoy your bank holiday Monday. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.